I wouldn't say this is a good film, but my God, did I enjoy it.
This was exactly as I expected it to be, and then some.
I don't think this is a bad film, because I think this is exactly the film it wants to be. This is a film that knows that you guys love romance. You guys love Lindsay Lohan. You guys love attractive people with good hair, doing fun things in nice outfits.
If you are asking me outright, is this a well-made film?
Yes.
No.
I do like Parent Trap. But this is terrible. I'm sorry. Hey everyone, and welcome to this episode of Flixwatcher Podcast. Today I'm joined by Claire.
Hello.
Daisy.
Hi.
And Helen.
Hi.
And we're going to be talking about Falling for Christmas. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Thank you, as always, to the mighty people for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts and anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello, film fans. Welcome to Flixwatcher Podcast. Our guests today are Claire and Daisy. Over to you, please, Daisy, to tell the listeners a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
Sure. Thank you for having me, first of all. So my name's Daisy. In terms of film stuff outside of my day job, I actually work in PR. But outside of that, I have produced a few short films in the last few years that are sort of in festivals, are going into the edit at the moment. So hopefully will be released in the next few months. And then I have a wonderful podcast that drives me crazy because of the content, but not because of the co-host. It's called W Rated, and we watch the worst rated films on IMDb. And might be a spoiler, might not be, but the person who I share that with is actually with us today.
When are we able to know more about your short films, Daisy?
So the first one, it's called Leonardo, it actually got screened as part of the London Film Festival, which was a huge surprise. It was one of the smaller showcases. So once it's done its festival run, hopefully that should be able to be shared online. And then I Love You Guys has been a huge time scale for that one, because it was filmed over the pandemic. So we raised all the money actually just as the pandemic kicked off, so to speak, in 2020. So that was quite a challenge. And then over three or four different filming blocks, we've managed to film everything with different crews each time, depending on when we're shooting in London or Sheffield. But that's in the edit. I've seen a couple of rough cuts, so that's really exciting. So that's going to be start going out to festivals hopefully very soon.
And what do you do? What part do you take in the films?
So I'm a producer, so I work closely along with the core crew to just make it happen, make sure everyone's doing their jobs well and getting the support that they need. But as part of the challenges with I Love You Guys, our director Billy actually moved to the States to do a graduate course. So I co-directed with Billy via Zoom one of the sessions. So I mean, if you're gonna produce a short film, do it in a pandemic and then have all the extra challenges, I feel like, just really to make sure you really know what you're doing after you've been through all of the challenges. That's definitely the way to do it if you want to learn a lot in a short
It'll be a piece of cake next time. It'll be a piece of cake next time.
This is how I'm thinking. Yeah.
And who are you in the bottom right corner of my screen, as I can see you?
So I'm Claire. Hello. I am Hello. Daisy's co-host, returning Flixwatcher guest. Love that I am back again. So I co-host W Rated with Daisy. One day soon, I will also be the host of another podcast if I get my ass into gear. I've been teasing it since August. And it's still, I recorded one episode and I arranged guests and then I never did any of it. But yeah. No, I'm here. I am a somewhat retired film critic, but still a film aficionado, and what number one Irish-based Lindsay Lohan stan, though in the last 2 weeks, I have learned that so many people, because I live in Ireland now, and she was filming her next film in Ireland called, I think it's called Irish Wish or something like that, but it's based in Ireland. I have found that so many people I work with have been in rooms with her over the last 6 months. And like, why has no one ever told me this? So feeling, I'm like, I'm so, in so many ways, one degree of separation from Lindsay. So close, so far.
Well, obviously that leads us into this film, which is the one you chose, Falling for Christmas.
Yes.
I'm guessing being a Lindsay stan is part of the reason why you chose it. If there's anything else, do elaborate on that. And also, I'm going to get the timer up and you'll have 1 minute or less to give us your synopsis.
So, Falling for Christmas is not Lindsay Lohan's comeback to film, because she has been filming the last few years, but it's her comeback to a starring role. And it's her first in a multi-movie deal with Netflix. She stars as Sierra, a spoiled hotel heiress, who in an accident falls from ski slopes and knocks herself unconscious and then develops amnesia. So while she can remember a few things, she cannot remember who she is, what she's doing. And she is found by a guy who runs a very small B&B.
Oh, sorry, you've gone into the synopsis. I didn't know you started already.
Oh, no, no. I thought you pressed start.
Keep going.
I'll keep going. Oh, no.
You've got more time than normal.
It's actually a really simple synopsis as well. I don't even need that much time. She meets the owner of an Airbnb who takes her in, and she learns to fend for herself. She learns to be her own person. And of course, she falls in love with the owner of the B&B, who happens to be a single dad. But will true love prevail? Will she find her memory? Will she find out that she's actually rich and engaged to another man? Is Santa real? So many questions.
All right. So
went off the hinges there. I apologise.
That's all right. It's all right. This is our first Christmassy film, I think, Helen, isn't it? In the 5 plus nearly 6 years of doing this podcast.
Wow, it's the second one, but we may have done a Christmas film outside of the Christmas season. So this is our first official Christmas special.
So what was that nice Christmas film? I can't remember.
The Holiday.
Yeah.
Also starring Lindsay Lohan.
Is she in The Holiday?
Oh, yeah, she's in the trailer,
isn't
she?
She's in the trailer that Cameron Diaz is making.
Ah, yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, starring
love
there.
Love that I know that.
A bit of a stretch,
then. It counts on Letterboxd, therefore it counts.
Sure. Of course, Holiday. Sam, sorry if you're listening. I know you're a big fan and you probably want to kill me for not remembering that The Holiday. It is a Christmassy film, I guess. Yeah, fine. But yeah, this is our first Christmas special recorded at Christmas time. Netflix doesn't have many obviously good Christmas films. Is this one of them, Helen?
Put you on the spot there, Helen.
According to Netflix, this was a 98% match, which I feel was maybe a bit of a reach on their behalf. I like some Christmas films, but the ones I like tend to be quite old ones, I should say. I'm not big into the Hallmark Christmas films. There's no surprises. So I guess going into this, I wasn't quite sure what to expect, but I actually thought it was fine. I thought it was quite fun. It's very, very sweet. There's a couple of very strange moments in it. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it's a 98% match, but on the whole, I had a nice time with it. So Yeah.
Just this time, I've been asked for like a while now if people can tell us what their match scores was with Netflix. Mine was 94%, which I thought was excessive on this. But I think myself and Helen...
The algorithm doesn't lie, Toby, listen.
Does it not?
The data doesn't lie.
Because myself and Helen have to watch a lot of films that we wouldn't traditionally watch, which is a very good thing as well. I'm not sure how closely Netflix can track our scores. Mm. But did you guys get a match score, if you remember it?
I don't have a match score.
Yeah, I've just tried to look it up, which is why I got really close to the camera as I grabbed my remote to turn it on mute, just in case Netflix does its thing of playing everything automatically. And yeah, it's not coming up for me.
Weirdly. Oh, really?
I don't know if it... Did you see it after you watched it, or does it have to be before you've watched it?
It's before you press play.
I watched it weeks ago, so I don't know what it was.
Same. I had watched it prior to being invited to this wonderful experience. Okay. So it was like, we don't need to recommend this to you. We know you love it. We don't need to...
And I actually watched it at my boyfriend's, so his Netflix recommendations are going to be nice and swerved now.
As a result of that.
Yeah.
What about yourself, Daisy? Is this a good Christmas film for Netflix, or is it a good Christmas film in general?
Good and Christmas films. They don't need to be. That's not my thing of good doesn't need to come into Christmas films. Like, Christmas films just need to make me feel Christmassy, I think. I think there's a different scale of good when it comes to films versus Christmas films. To be fair, I think Claire would agree that even with regular films, I've got a really, really funny, funny definition of good.
So all these worst rated films are ones you actually like. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I always end up liking
you're doing a podcast on the worst rated IMDb films. Now, the top rated IMDb films, some of those are quite questionable. So once you get down the bottom,
there's
some interesting things going on down there.
Daisy just loves to see the positive in everything.
I do.
Well, Daisy is a filmmaker, so as you know, it's super difficult to get a film started. So I think that everyone's made a film or anything like that will have some sympathy.
Funny enough, doesn't stop me ripping into a few of them sometimes. but I do preface it by saying, like, you know, I appreciate everyone's hard work. But it depends what you're going in for. I wouldn't say this is a good film, but my God, did I enjoy it. So is it good? Good for me, for what I wanted it to do, and it's what I expected. For me, there's this whole thing about expectations. If it's what you wanted from it, and it's entertainment at the end of the day, everything's subjective, it's entertained me and it's what I wanted, then that's how I struggle with star ratings and stuff. If you are asking me outright, is this a well-made film?
Yes.
No. It's not terrible, it's a bit shonky, but it's isn't not it? Great. It's poor. It's poor. It's poor. There you go.
This was exactly as I expected it to be, and then some. I don't know if I feel sorry for Lindsay Lohan, because she was like the Disney on the Disney kind of pedestal for a while, wasn't she? And then, you know, her career's gone south. I used to kind of laugh at people's careers gone south, but now in the post kind of Me Too era, you can kind of see that some of these things could generally not be as a result of them just being idiots, although male idiots like, you know, Robert Downey Jr. tend to have a bit more of an opportunity to come back. So I've never really watched and enjoyed a Lindsay Lohan film apart from potentially the Parent Trap.
Do you not like Mean Girls?
Oh yeah, of course Mean Girls.
Is the one defining film. Like, I don't think even people that don't love it, I've never met anyone that dislikes it.
And we've had Mean Girls on here. I was looking forward to Mean Girls being on here, and I do enjoy it. So I apologise. I was thinking more like the Disney times.
But great shout out. Parent Trap is Chef's Kiss.
Preferred. Yeah. Parent Trap's my number one.
Is it?
Yeah.
I do like Parent Trap though. But this is terrible. I'm sorry.
I'm not going to disagree with you, Toby. I'm really not. I'm not going to fight that corner.
You can, of course, rehash old storylines, but this is overboard from the 80s. This is Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell's rich woman loses her mind, helps out poorer people and falls in love with them. And also there's a bit of It's a Wonderful Life at the end with a guy kind of going, oh, no one's going to help me out. I'm trying to do all these good things for good people and then my life's screwed as a result. And everyone's like, here's some money.
They're giving them checks as well. Like, checks still exist in America.
They actually
do. Check for at least 15 years.
Some places in America still don't have chip and pin. They still make you sign. America's weird.
Yeah. And you have to pay for each check you use in some places, don't you? That's like 15 cents if you want to actually use a check. Guys, America's strange. So I knew it was going to happen. I don't think it was done that well. Lindsay Lohan is the only person I knew before watching this film.
You mean you weren't familiar with the Chord Overstreet?
Chord Overstreet. Cord. That man worked hard. He was like, I'm going to get a job in Glee, so I need a musical sounding name. My name is going to be Chord, like a musical name.
So I know it sounds completely stupid for me to say, so it's not his real name, because people name people really, really strange things.
Oh, so he did change it to Chord.
As far as I'm aware, it is a stage name, but it is such a ridiculous stage name that you would assume it couldn't be a stage name. I haven't fact-checked myself, but I might fact-check myself while on air, but I'm fairly sure I did read a while ago that he legally changed his name to that.
Is he? I don't know who he is, but I'm assuming he's Tad.
So, he was the love interest, the owner of the inn.
Oh, so okay.
He's Jake.
So he's not the influencer guy?
Yeah. No, 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 no.
budget Chris Pine kind of guy. I was kind of like,
yeah.
It looks a bit like Chris Pine if Chris Pine's face was a bit different.
It's a bit more doughy.
It looks like Chris Pine if he looked different.
So he was brought into Glee, in season two of Glee, as the rival to the guy who played Finn, who passed away.
Corey Monteith.
Yeah, he was the love rival.
How many people thought I'd be able to pull out the actors in Glee season two?
That was very quick off the draw, Kobe.
I'm a complete liar. His legal name is Cord Overstreet and he is the son of a musician.
There we go.
Fair
See,
enough.
Something about me just knew that was too, like
too terrible.
Too strange to not be true.
But yeah, no, he came into Glee and he's done a few things after Glee, but I would personally, as a massive Gleek, like I saw Glee live in London. I love Gleek. I think this is his biggest role since Glee. Again, fact check me away on Twitter. Go wild. Do what you want.
I didn't buy the relationship as well. There's so many things. I had issues with. I think the acting was a bit OTT and nonsensical. I didn't buy that he wouldn't recognise her as well. Because at least that.
Right.
But
they bumped into each other.
I have to say, I'm so ready to mount my soapbox to disagree with almost everything you said, but I do agree with that point. Like, as a nervous person who hates upsetting people, if I had bumped into someone and spilt something on them and then they screamed at me, their face would be burned into my memory. Like, her overreaction, I'd never forget her face.
So my writing away of that is that he did just say, I didn't know who your dad was, or I didn't know you were her daughter. So no, they don't write in how he would react. It would have been better and more thought out for him to be like, there is a reason why he doesn't tell her who she is or something. And then it just give a bit more to the plot, you know, that he's maybe not got
Make
the best intentions.
Sinister.
Not necessarily sinister, just in a very like sort of in this sort of settings world of him kind of getting his own back a little bit and making her work like and help out and things like that. And then falling for her anyway, still not knowing who dad was. But yeah, no, it doesn't make sense that would happen and then him react the way that he
but
does.
But she was wearing sunglasses.
Ah, I see. Well,
but then
it's the Clark Kent effect. And if Superman lasted 40 years, I guess Lindsay Lohan and sunglasses can last a 90-minute movie.
I don't know if you guys have seen Overboard, but that was one of the things that made it really sinister, was that the fact that the same thing happens. Well, she falls overboard from a ship and loses her memory that way. But Kurt Russell, who essentially is Cord's character in Overboard, does recognise it was Goldie Hawn.
Oh, there you go.
So, yeah. So, in the 80s, that was kind of hijinks.
So, yeah, no, I've not seen it. No. So, I'm going to give myself a little gold star for being like, oh, I've actually thought of quite a good idea.
Yeah.
And it's just been done before. Great.
Yeah, it's now very kind of like, dude, that's wrong. Just like, take the lady back.
Yeah, I suppose maybe mine wouldn't be completely appropriate, but we'd find a way. We'd find a way.
Was there anyone else in the cast of note? Was anyone in the cast? I mean, the little girl's cute, wasn't she?
Oh, she was lovely. Like, gold star to her.
The acting was awful. I just can't stand that over egging theatre style. Like, because kids don't talk like that. You know, like it's like precocious, but like in a really bad way. Like it's precocious, but not in a charming / annoying. It's precocious in a why are you talking like a 60-year-old on the stage? Like it's just some. Her line delivery didn't match that of an 11-year-old girl, and it just kind of took me out of it a little bit because it was just like. She was probably the best actress, but that's why it was bad, because she was over-egging everything, whereas no one else was really meeting that level of schmaltz and stage acting, as I probably shouldn't call it, but that's what I think of.
Is there anyone for you, Helen, that stood out in the cast?
I mean, stood out in a weird way had to be Tad.
Mm.
He was in a different movie.
I know, but he kind of made it work.
He did.
After a little while, I was like, okay, I'm kind of buying into this now.
There's a tradition of that role in these movies as well. Like having, unfortunately, putting myself through a few of these Netflix Christmas movies, like that's a signature role in these films.
What's that? Like it's unwitting.
It's almost like the old school Shakespeare, like Midsummer Night's Dream, like the pixies. Is it the pixies or whatever they are? Like the ones that cause the mischief. Mm. So there's like, I preface this by saying I actually don't like Christmas or Christmas movies, but for whatever reason, I got mad into Netflix Christmas movies for the last couple of years. So they had a franchise, which is The Christmas Prince. Don't know. I'm going to assume that Kobe has not put himself through this.
Nope.
If Kobe thinks this is a bad movie, oh boy, just wait until you get to the Christmas Prince movies. There's three of them. They will take you to a whole other plane of Christmas level badness. But they are like, that was the prototype, because that movie, for whatever reason, exploded. It was like the best Netflix movie that had ever been made, the best original movie. People were doing watch parties. There was like one person that watched it like every night for 80 nights in a row.
That's
and, like, they released the stats and they were like, whoever this person is, please seek help. Like, and so then they made two sequels. And then the cast didn't want to do them anymore. So then they made the Princess Switch movies starring Vanessa Hudgens, where Vanessa Hudgens...
I've seen those.
Yeah. So they're the second one. And they also exist in the same universe as the Christmas Prince movies, because they're making a Christmas Netflix universe.
Right.
So there are two, if not three, of those movies where it's basically the prince and the pauper. Vanessa Hudgens is a struggling baker at Christmas, and then there's a struggling princess at Christmas, and they switch roles and fall in love and realise the true meaning of Christmas. And now they don't. Vanessa Hudgens doesn't want to be in those anymore either. So now we have the Falling for Christmas universe.
A Castle for Christmas is also in this universe as well.
Castle for Christmas tried. I don't think they succeeded in the way that the other ones
had a little Easter egg in this film, though, didn't it?
It did. So there is a Netflix Christmas universe, but every single one of these films has to have a girl out of her element. It has to have a man who is a single dad, or in the case of A Christmas Prince, an older brother with a young sibling who he has had to take over a mentorship role, because so the dad is dead, so he's basically the father. It has to have a camp best friend or best friends. In the case of Falling for Christmas, they slightly switched that up, that it is her fiancé, but they're very rarely together. And in the other films, the camp friend is always just off causing mischief. It has to have an over-aching, worrying parent figure, and it has to have a love story. And it has to have an absolutely ludicrous ending love story that would never happen in the real world. And Falling for Christmas, it was just like tick, 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 tickety, tick. We have done all the things that a Netflix Christmas movie requires.
Did they also all have the creepy Santa, who was just a little bit creepy?
Santa, this is my thing as well. And this is what I wanted to bring to the table. Where are your guys' opinion on movies set at Christmas that have fuck all to do with Santa, just randomly having Santa in? Like, if it's a Santa movie, fair play. Like, be Santa. But when it's a movie that's completely set in the real world, where we all know Santa doesn't exist.
Yeah,
and
but...
And then they're just like, Santa's
yeah,
there.
But that's what they're trying to say, is that she was the miracle that the daughter wished for. So just a little, is there a little sprinkling of magic in there? Because... magic at Christmas, etc., etc. Yeah, I don't know. It's just par for the course, isn't it? Whatever, you know. It's just like Christmas bingo at this point with any Christmas film.
But in Christmas Prince and in The Princess Switch, there is like an old Christmassy man just always being like,
oh, a Christmassy man.
Yeah.
It just sounds like you're not allowed to say Santa because it's trademark.
Trademark, yeah. Netflix are like, didn't get the trademark off Disney, did we?
Maybe they don't want to pay the royalties, I don't know. But there's always
it's
just
like Colin the Caterpillar, but Cuba, or whatever he's called, because he's from Aldine, and copyright
Charlie.
Law.
But yeah, there's it. Always just a mischievous man with a white beard being like, ho-ho-ho, in the background.
Why is that man still here?
He just turned up on set one day and,
yeah. And they were like, you look Christmassy, come on in.
Guys, is there anything else you want to say before we head to the scores on this? I mean, Lindsay Lohan, sorry. Lindsay Lohan.
Can I just defend the film?
Of course.
Again, as someone who is not mad into Christmas, I don't think this is a bad film, because I think this is exactly the film it wants to be. This film is not trying to be an award-winning, glorious film. This is a film that knows that you guys love romance. You guys love Lindsay Lohan. You guys love attractive people with good hair, doing fun things in nice outfits.
Who's attractive?
Lindsay Lohan and Cordova Street are mildly attractive. If you live where I live, they walk down the street, you would stop and stare. Like, they may not be, like, I still think they're movie star attractive, but like, go out in the real world, then come back and tell me that they're not attractive.
Oh no, she was right. Look at all of them.
I must return to Netflix immediately.
But this is a film to just pop on while you're wrapping your presents, while you're writing your Christmas cards, while you're having friends over and you're all having a mulled wine or a hot chocolate or eating a box of celebrations. This is a perfect Christmas present wrapping film. And for me, someone else summed it up better, and I wish I knew who wrote this review because I cannot remember, but someone basically wrote, this is the apex mountain of Hallmark movies. So, like, I've watched it. I used to be mad into Hallmark movies. It was an embarrassing time in my life. But I used to go home every day and watch a minimum of 3 Hallmark movies every day after school. Oh, I just loved it. True crime Hallmark movies. The one starring Fora Birch, where she's the kid on the milk bottle who was abducted. Telling you, great movie. Don't know what it is. Great movie. So this is a low rung of, like, normal in quotation marks movies, but of a Hallmark made for TV movie, this is perfection on every level. You've got a cast who can act. You guys might disagree, but like, they're not bad at acting. They're not great at acting, but they're not bad at acting. You've got a somewhat okay budget. It's not falling apart at the seams. You've got a decent soundtrack. It's well put together. It's edited okay. Like, this is peak made for TV movie. It unfortunately does not cross over that barrier. And I wonder if it did want to cross over it, but of what it is, it's the top. It is the top of that pyramid. And we did an episode on I Know Who Killed Me, starring Lindsay Lohan, back in 2020. And I said, had Lindsay have gone through her struggles a few years later, what would have saved her would have been a Netflix deal. So now to see her get her Netflix deal has made me so
happy. I didn't know
happy.
It was a deal, actually, which is
It's a free film deal. So the second film is like Irish Wish or something like that. And it's about her wishing to be married to someone in Ireland. And I don't know what the third one is.
Something else.
So that's like, it's like Leap Year. Wasn't that set in Ireland?
So basically she's starring, she is maid of honour at her best friend's wedding. And it's a guy that she always wanted to be with. And so she wishes in an Irish wishing well or something that it was her wedding. And then she wakes up the next day and it is her wedding. And then it's her deciding, oh my God, did I really want this? Oh. And she's been filming it all over Ireland. And apparently everyone I know has seen these film sets and not told me. But the thing that I love as well is that this lets Lindsay shine. And I know that, like, there are loads of people that are like, Lindsay isn't the strongest actress. Lindsay isn't this, Lindsay isn't that. And like, people were talking about her appearance and things. But what I do think she always had was a charisma. And I do think that in any scene that she's in, she gets that camera focus. She steals the camera lens.
For sure.
She has an old school screen presence. And unfortunately, she just came of age in an era where the rom-coms died. Rom-coms don't exist anymore. The only rom-coms that do exist are these cheap Netflix rom-coms. Even when you get big screen things.
Some of them are very good. Some of them get the high scores on
some of them do. And that's just luck because they're very few and far between. You get Zoe Deutch in them. Yeah, you'll get Zoe Deutch.
I love her.
What a woman. But Lindsay, I just think this is the perfect role for her. I just think she shines in the presence. She absolutely, it's ridiculous and it's silly. And she knows it's silly. And I think as the audience, we know it's silly, but it's fun.
She's playing like, into it for sure.
She's
like, it's
so
just not
leaning
yeah.
into it. Like, and yeah. it is ridiculous. And you roll your eyes at the song where she's singing in the car. And you roll the eyes at, I don't know how to make a bed.
Brilliant. Like, and I was laughing in my part. I was like, what are you laughing at? It's the Mean Girls reference. Yeah. And he was like, okay. I was like, this is amazing.
But it's, and I say this all the time, it's a candy floss movie. And I just think not every movie needs to be a 5-star award-winning, soul-crushing, amazing movie. Sometimes I just want to watch a film and then it ends and I go, that was fun. What am I going to do
now? I think your candy floss thing is such a good point.
Like, I had a nice time. It was a short movie. I enjoyed it. It made me smile while I was watching it, despite myself. It even committed my worst cinema sin, which is showing me a montage of things that happened in the movie that only happened
I hate that.
40 minutes ago. I don't need a montage. So I already saw them. But even still, despite that, it knows the movie it is. And I don't think that should be held against it.
I thank you for your defence there of Christmas
Very
movie.
Very long defence. I do apologise.
Anyone for the prosecution?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm so sorry.
Anyone else wants to step up?
I guess we'll find out when you unleash your scores onto it. Yeah. So.
Hello, I'm Hannah Flint from The First Film Club, a film podcast series dedicated to established and emerging talent, both in front of and behind the camera, and the feature debuts that launch their careers. From the new drama Mass to the cult classic Heathers, each episode is dedicated to a film, a guest, and the behind-the-scenes stories, memories, and advice from their time on set. Find us, The First Film Club, wherever you listen to your stripped media podcasts. Come join the club.
I will start with you, please, Claire, with your recommendability. They're always out of five. So, I mean, it could be quite strong coming from you, I think.
No, I'm going for a solid three because I would recommend this, but with a caveat. I'd be like, it's silly, it's stupid, but it's fun. And so I recommend it with that caveat. Like, I was hoping, like, yeah, give it a watch. Like, pop it on while you're doing something else. Pop it on while you've got people over. Like, it's just a fun, silly. It's like a soap opera. And we don't have enough. They cancelled Neighbours. So, like, just.
It's come back.
I know, I'm so back. Excited.
Are you?
I'm so excited.
She genuinely is, I promise.
Yeah. Yeah, like, it's a free. It's a solid free. It's a recommendation with a caveat of don't expect miracles.
Daisy.
Did you do half?
You can do many decimal places.
Oh my God, yeah, no, I can't go that. Too much math. I'm going to go 2.5. It's just slightly below. It's straight down the middle for me because it's one of those things where do you want to watch a film like that? And if you do, perfect. That's exactly what you should go for. If you have no interest in watching a film like that, I would just take it from you and hold it tight and be like, well, I'll watch it then. You know, it's just straight down the middle. If it's what you want, it's perfect. If it's not, then don't go anywhere near it because you shouldn't. Because I don't want a negative opinion about something that you're not interested in the first place.
That's fair. Well, this is part of the recommendability, is like understanding your audience.
For sure.
And if you can't recommend it easily to all audiences, then for me, it's anyway, Helen, you go first.
I'm going to give it a 3 as well. I think for a film that doesn't take itself too seriously and, you know, is only an hour and 35 minutes and is quite bizarre as well, I think there are a lot worse films out there than this. And I think if the thought of the return of Lindsay Lohan in her bigger role is something that interests you and you like silly Christmas films, then yeah, it's for you. It was surprisingly more pro bacon than I was expecting. Like, there's like really weird bits and you're like, that's such a weird thing to be like really obsessing about. So it's kind of like fascinating in sort of a way that you like watching it going, this is really weird, but kind of interesting.
Very anti-vegan, pro single dad agenda.
Was the bacon to show that how much she'd changed since knocking her head?
Maybe.
Well, she didn't like bacon before.
I guess rich woman. People don't like bacon. Working class people, they love bacon.
I was like, okay. I'm going for 2. I can recognise that definitely people would like this, but I actually, quite interestingly, this is the scenario I'd watch this kind of film again. I was just doing some copy pasting from one Excel sheet to another, and it was there on the corner of my screen, and I knew I didn't really have to pay attention, and you knew telegraphed when you would have to pay attention a bit more, and then I went back to my excelling. So I apologised. I wasn't the most engaged. I was going to pay into the score later on, but I knew I didn't have to be, and I was, you know,
spoon feeding you Christmas pudding. Like, here you go, here's some Christmas. You're like, thank you, back to my spreadsheet.
So. 2. Repeat viewing score, Claire.
I gave it a 5 because this was my second viewing and it was actually easier to watch. Like, because again, I think because of that, I was watching it while building a jigsaw. So I was having, like, the first time I watched it to really pay attention. So I was like, Lindsay's back, yay. The second time I watched it, I was just vibing, sat on my floor, building a jigsaw, had it on in the background. Because I'd seen it before, I knew the bits that I needed to pay attention to and I knew the bits I didn't. And it was perfect, just background, chill, good vibes.
Fine. I've got a Lego to build at some point, hopefully over Christmas. I will not be watching that.
May I recommend the Christmas Prince trilogy?
Nope.
I thought you meant Lego set. I was like, wow, they move quick.
Daisy, your repeat viewing score?
I'd probably say a 3 for rewatchability, purely just because I think Christmas films are limited anyway, because you do generally only watch them at a certain time of year. And there's a lot to choose from, and there's probably quite a lot more that I'd rather rewatch every year than this one, but that doesn't mean to say that it wouldn't be in the rotation or up for what's the word? Just, yeah, it'll be there for me to potentially choose, but I can't see me watching it every year. So that's kind of what I based it on. You're going to prioritise it.
How many Christmas films do you get in a go through in a Christmas period?
Well, last year I watched at least one a day because I set myself from a little challenge. From the start challenge. Of December? From the start of September. December. But this year I haven't done that.
25.
Yeah, this year I haven't done that. Just because I'm trying to keep more on top of new releases. But so there's quite a few, obviously, of the classic Christmas films that are in the rotation. And then you've got all of the crap ones coming out every year that are fun to watch. So it'll probably be there every few years. Maybe I'll be like, oh, that'll be quite a bad. I can't see myself rushing too quickly back to watch it again.
Helen, repeat viewing score.
I'm not going to watch this again. I definitely got all of that I got. So a 0.5.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Yeah, I can't see myself watching it again. There've been some good, the thing about Christmas films are, maybe Helen alluded to this before, is like, if you watch them, when you watch them when you're younger, that's when they're most magical. Mm-hmm. And that's when they span the rest of your life. Like Santa Claus, a movie in my head, I know it's a terrible, terrible film and I haven't watched it for at least 20 years, but in my mind, it's still like amazing. But so, because I watched it when I was a kid and everything was magical, but now as a more cynical grown up person, a lot of it's like just purely naff.
And they're so generational, because for me and Arthur Christmas, it's like, no, that's a shit new Christmas movie. People who are 5 years younger than me, what? Like Daisy, who's horrified, Arthur Christmas is one of your childhood Christmas movies. But that came out when I was a teenager/adult. So to me, I'm like, no, that's no thank you.
When did it come out? Sorry, but Bill Nye is the grandpa. Sorry.
I've never even watched it because I'm like, we don't need any more Christmas movies. Oh, but Christmas, my brain at that age was like, we have enough, no more.
Yeah. Stop the count. We have enough Christmas films.
Last year there was a film with Dan Levy and Alison Brie, which I can't quite remember the name of.
No, it was 2 years ago and I loved it. And it had Aubrey Plaza in and it, oh my God, and I had Kristen Stewart in and I absolutely loved it.
It's miserable,
which is why I love it.
People, quickly search the internet. Hold on one second.
Christ, why can I not remember that film?
Dan Levy. Aubrey Plaza.
Happy season.
Yes, that's the one.
Because it was part of what I hoped would be a Kristen Stewart miserable Christmas trilogy, because she did that in 2020. Then in 2021, she did Spencer, which is technically a Christmas movie because it's set over the Christmas weekend. So I was like, where is Kristen Stewart's third I Hate Christmas movie? Because I love them all. I just love watching Kristen Stewart hate Christmas.
Yeah, I think the, one point was, I really liked that one. I thought it was great.
Lovely.
But I was predisposed to with Aubrey Plaza, Dan Levy, who I think's fantastic. Looking forward to him in the next season of Sex Education. And who was the other person? Alison Brie, who I love as well.
So
I was kind of predisposed to like it. Mm-hmm. So there can be good and quite cheaply made Christmas. There was nothing fancy about that one either. I think just having a good story that kind of makes sense. If they had a fancy, magical, miracle kind of elf person in it, like Father Christmas, I think that would have been fine in that as well. But
is that how you're judging how crap something is, as if it has a random Christmas magical elf?
appearance.
I think the difference between Happiest Season and Falling for Christmas is budget, not in terms of the film, is budget in terms of cast. Because the cast of Happiest Season is stacked. Every single person, whilst they might not necessarily be movie stars, there is not a single person that has not been in a critically acclaimed TV show in the last 10 years. That cast is absolutely stacked for people. Falling for Christmas, they gave their entire budget to Lindsay. And I think that is the difference.
They didn't even have enough money for like a good camera at that point.
or realistic looking snow.
Yeah.
So we also have Mackenzie Davis, who I think is awesome.
Oh, love her.
And the Steenburgen. Mm-hmm. Oh.
The car, there is not a bad person in that bunch. It's such a beautiful movie. It's a perfect movie.
Lauren Lapkus as well. Guys, you know.
We should watch this.
Spend money on your cast. It's not on Netflix. It's on Prime, I believe.
It was on Prime. It was on Now and it was on Prime at various points.
Okay.
So
anyway, let's get back to this film. Everyone, we seem to be dodging talking about it. Small screen score. This might pick up some points here. For me, anyway. Claire?
It's a 4.5 for me, literally, because this is made for the small screen. And it looks better on a laptop than it does on a TV. And this would look horrific in cinema. I don't want to see this in the cinema. This knows what it's made for. And I'm okay with that. And it's okay with it. We all know, the cinematographer knows, the director knows, the audience knows. We all know this is a small screen movie.
Daisy?
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 4.5 as well, because I actually finished watching it on the phone on the train. And I was perfect. And I was perfectly happy doing that. I don't tend to like doing that at all. And if I do, it's something like a sitcom or Pokemon or something like that. And yeah, I don't feel like I got anything less from it. In fact, in a weird way, listening to it with headphones, maybe then listen to the soundtrack as I was walking along. So I feel like, yeah, no, if you're going to watch anything, this kind of stuff is made for that, because you don't, like Claire said, it actually makes it look better because you're not picking out the tiny details.
Helen?
It's a 5 for me. I wouldn't have gone to see this at the cinema. So yeah, perfect for the small screen.
The reason I went oof when you said 4.5, I just thought it's a stone cold 5. I'm going for a 5 as well.
Well, because I know I don't like watching stuff. I've always got to have my thing of like, I watched it between a TV and a phone, and as much as I didn't really notice too much difference, I still would prefer seeing it on a big screen.
That's it. My goal is to see things as big as possible, so it does lose a little bit, because it should. A good film is adaptable to all viewing experiences.
Engagement score, Claire. You're jigsawing during the second time, so it can't be that high. let us know.
But you know what? It's almost because of that, my engagement score would be a 4, because it is difficult to turn off, because it's so easy to watch.
You don't remember it's on.
What's the point in turning it off? Like, if you asked me this 10 or 15 years ago.
Get on with your life.
But like, I was building a jigsaw. Come on, what was I doing?
Sure.
But like 10, 15 years ago, when we had cable TV and you could flick through the channels and there were a million things on. But nowadays, when I want to watch something, I have to think, right, what streamers do I have? What are the options on my streamers? Oh my God, now I've got to look for the watch list, and the watch list has like 30, 40, 50 things on it. Just pop this on and just turn your brain off. It was beautiful. I needed to disconnect.
I don't understand what you're saying there, because now there's more films on offer than there were on cable.
The stress of picking a film is so high, because I'm like, there's too much choice. I miss just popping on Channel 4 and being like, what's the 9 o'clock movie? Oh, I like that
I missed
movie.
That.
I'll sit down and watch it.
Channel 4 still exists. You can still put Channel 4 on at 9 o'clock and there'll be a film.
We don't have terrestrial TV in my house.
I do miss that aspect of just coming home and seeing what was on and being like, oh, I watched that thing.
Yeah.
But I do not sanction the bit where this. Well, I can understand the stress of which film to pick. Fine,
choice
and
paralysis.
None of them make it easy.
Choice paralysis.
But also, when a film is on that I don't want to watch and I don't need to watch it, and there's a million other films to watch, my life. I can see my life. Force kind of draining away.
Absolutely, I do agree with that, but I don't think this film falls into that category either. This film isn't so heinous that I'm like, I hate this, I want to turn it off. The worst thing about this film is it's really predictable and it's cheesy. But you know what? I can totally vibe with that and leave it playing. If it was like offensive or difficult or annoyed me, but like, I'm just like, ah, it's cute, it's fine, it's whatever, leave it on. It's more effort to turn it off and find something else to watch.
Daisy, engagement score. We spent a lot of time on this four. From, it's not your fault. Already, I'm not going to tell you what the score is. Well, the score is currently 2.68750, which is already higher than I thought it was going to be.
I'm actually going to go for a... I'm probably going to say a 3.5 because, like Claire said, like I wouldn't turn it off. Because it will be, I'd be watching it, and then if I'm, I'd probably watch it in the background, or I'm doing other things, wrapping presents, things like that. Like, I would quite happily. It's not that long a film. Like, I know what I've got myself in for. If I put it on, I'm gonna be ready for that for an hour and a half. Unless I'm going out, I'm probably not gonna turn it off. Even if I leave it on, make a cup of tea, come back. So although it's not engaging in the way that traditionally you probably look at it, for what it does and what it is, I wouldn't necessarily turn it off. So I'm going to go for a 3.5 because I'm still cognizant that engaged isn't quite there, but I wouldn't turn it off. So
Helen,
I'm going to give it a 2.5. I mean, there wasn't really that many surprises going on. I could kind of guess where it was going, but that it wrapped everything up within its rather short 1 hour 35 was quite pleasing. If it had been any longer, then I don't know if I could have finished watching it. So I think this was it was fine. 2.5.
1.5. Like I said, I was on XL at the same time in a different corner of the screen. I have got quite a big screen though, so it wasn't like tiny, but at the same time I knew I didn't have to pay attention for me, and I didn't. 1.5, so that gives us an overall score of 3.1565, which is definitely higher than I thought it was going to be. And it's, the small screen score kicked it out into the orbits, really.
What I will say is that obviously you guys have got a really cool scoring system where you're taking into account your ethos of the podcast, right? Like going into Netflix, what are you getting out from Netflix versus just general film scores? So that's really interesting to me, because it's like, as a Netflix film, this works quite well. Versus if we were going to review it as a theatrical release, I can imagine the scores would be very different.
I completely, like, as a fan of the film, completely agree. Like, if I'd have paid good money to go to the cinema to see this, I'd be like, excuse me.
We have a tweet, I believe, Helen.
We do.
Related to this. Everyone following us online, please do follow us on Twitter. We are at FlixWatcherPod. And we do put out tweets related to films in general, films on Netflix. But also, before we go into record, we put out a little tweet asking for your opinions. Look out for a tweet saying something like this. We're reviewing Falling for Christmas with Claire, Ellen Hope and Daisy Vic Edwards. Have you seen it? Tell us your thoughts and a score out of 5 stars for a shout out on FlixWatcher Podcast. And we had one response, which was a coercive response, I think, from Helen's husband. Claire, have you got that in front of you?
So Reese Hayward gives it 3 stars and says, all a bit silly, but quite sweet and better than Love Actually. Which, you know, I'd say on par with Love Actually. You know, because it's silly, it's sweet, it's nonsensical, but we're all just here for the good vibes.
He watched the whole film, which is a lot more than most films, so...
Has he watched Jurassic Park yet?
Not yet.
What? Maybe I'll try that. What have you watched? I have watched Falling for Christmas, but I haven't watched Jurassic Park. Everyone's got one of those.
It's me, The Godfather. I've still never seen The Godfather.
Yeah, Matt, who's been on the podcast, says to me, he'll do it with any classic film. We're like, you haven't seen Vertigo, but you have seen The Human Centipede 2 twice. And I'm like, yes, I have. That's me.
Yeah, I will never watch any Human Centipede films.
So you're not going to come on to our podcast and do Human Centipede 3? No, that's a decline.
Probably not for that film.
We wouldn't be that mean. We'd let you pick a different one. Someone's got to do it, though. That's all I'm saying.
Well, Daisy and Claire, can you sign off by telling everyone who's listening, tell them where we can find you online, and we'll say goodbye to them. And also, Merry Christmas.
Sure. So you can find me on Twitter at Daisy Vic Edwards, and I'm on Letterboxd and Instagram at Daisy Victoria Edwards. And our podcast is at W Rated Pod on Twitter. And I think it's W Rated on Instagram. Is that right, Claire? Perfect. See, I always forget. I pass over to Claire.
Yeah, you can find me at Claire Ellen Hope, Claire without the I, on Twitter and Instagram, and sometimes behind the W Rated podcast Twitter. And hopefully we will be back with episodes very soon. I do actually have some episodes up my sleeve. We're just trying to get some more so that we don't tease you. So we will be back soon, we promise. Hopefully. And Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas if you're listening around Christmas time. Otherwise, thank you for listening anyway. Bye.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K, Wood Audio. Tell them FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.